I'm Steve Potter, and this is Cityscape.
I'm nobody. Who are you? Are you nobody, too? Then there's a pair of us. Don't tell. They'd advertise. You know. How dreary to be somebody. How public, like a frog, to tell one's name, the livelong June, to an admiring bog.
That's St. Louis Public Radio's Bob McCabe, reading a poem by Emily Dickinson. He's just one of the readers who will be featured in The Belle of Blueberry Hill, Emily Dickinson at the Duck Room, which will take place Sunday at Blueberry Hill to mark National Poetry Month. Our guests today are Lauren Cuoco with the St. Louis Poetry Center, poet Katie Didden, and writer Bill Gass. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
The Emily Dickinson connection, she wrote a letter to someone in April of 1862 that had a lot of significance.
It did indeed. Colonel Thomas Higginson, a man of letters, had written a piece about giving advice to young poets. And she wrote him a letter after that and sent in four poems. And she asked him if they breathed. And he said later, it was the breath of a wholly new and original poetic genius. By the time of her death in 1886, she had left nearly 2,000 brief lyrics in her Amherst home.
Wow. We'll talk about more about her later. But in addition to our own Bob McCabe, who's going to be reading on Sunday?
We'll have poet Allison Funk, Anne Hobrick with the Prison Performing Arts and the host of Literature for the Halibut on KDHX, the poet laureate of East St. Louis, Eugene Redmond, and actor Susie Wall, who has performed in the play from which I cadged the name of our program, The Belle of Amherst. It was Emily Dickinson herself who said she was becoming the Belle of Amherst when she was a young woman, before she became famous for being a recluse. There are lots of theories about why she became this, such as that she had been spurned, which is not true. The latest and most well-researched theory is that she had epilepsy and didn't want to risk a seizure away from home or in front of guests. She lived from 1830 to 1886 and died at the age of 55.
Bill Gass, first, before we get on to the poetry, we want to congratulate you on the publication of a new novel. You have more of a dozen under your belt already, don't you?
Yes, this is the 15th.
15th, and this is
called... It's been published. the ones hidden under... The bad are...
So you and Emily Dickinson had a lot of work put away.
Yes, that's right.
Well, your novel is Middle C. What's that about?
Well, that stands for average, ordinary, and mediocre. That's what the book is about. A man who becomes absorbed in the crimes of mankind and who tries to lead a life that will escape responsibility for them. Good luck with that. And that is principally a novel trying not to be one.
Well, I noticed on the cover there is a piano key.
Yeah.
So I assume that's what middle C refers to, and not, I thought, maybe middle class, but no?
Yes, it does. Sure. Yeah. That one figure never needs to be explained, but the others sometimes do.
Well, middle C. We look forward to that. Mm-hmm. Could you talk a little bit about Emily Dickinson and what she means to you, and then perhaps share a poem with us?
Society in her day didn't mind if women knitted, played the piano a bit, wrote verse, dabbled at watercolors. But it became suspicious at publication and signs of seriousness in the writer. That was threatening. It was out of place. She had lots of reason not to publish. Not only was she worried about all kinds of things, but the reception would not have been a good thing as far as her daily life and so on. And another thing that you find about her, she's obsessed with death and has a right to, in a sense, because in those days, people were dying in their 40s and very rarely getting to the 75s. She is meeting death in a tone that's very childlike. The piece of poetry that was just read is very childlike. And that makes the surprise when a strange word pops in. But she's herself writing poetry that looks a lot like the paintings of primitives. and not fancy. It's not maneuvered by or in love with the Academy, and it's just telling you what you should write. The first thing they do is get rid of all the dashes that she put between almost every letter, let alone every word. She has shortness of breath, tons of poems, but almost all of them very short. I'll read one of them. Because I could not stop for death, he kindly stopped for me. The carriage held but just ourselves and immortality. We slowly drove. He knew no haste, and I had put away my labor and my leisure too for his civility. We passed the school where children strove at recess in the ring. We passed the fields of gazing grain. We passed the setting sun. Or rather, he passed us. The dews drew quivering and chill, for only gossamer, my gown, my tippet, only tulle. We paused before a house that seemed a swelling of the ground. The roof was scarcely visible, the cornice in the ground. Since then, 'tis centuries, and yet feels shorter than the day I first surmised the horses' heads were toward eternity.
This is National Poetry Month. Katie Didden, you're currently a postdoctorate fellow at St. Louis University, and you've published your first book of poetry recently, so congratulations to you, too.
Thank you so much. Yes, it's, the book is called The Glacier's Wake, and it won the Lena Miles Weaver Todd Prize from Pleiades Press. So it just came out this month.
Why don't you read something?
I would love to. I'll read a poem called The Sycamore on Praise. And this is actually what I call a double persona poem. So I'm speaking in the voice of a sycamore, but I also assigned it a career. So this is a sycamore who's also a minister. The Sycamore on Praise. A way to stay put is to feel earth tilting, to know its vast surface curves, that the sky's brightening is not the sun flattering you with its attention, just the speed at which you're spinning west. You're a speck. You aren't meant to last. Seeing death everywhere, you can choose despair, blunt your roots on rocks, accuse the cold wind as it lashes your limbs, then train your shape to the synonym for whip. You can rip the sky to skim water. Or you can watch yourself change, marvel how death models you with strange spots, wrinkles your skin, and plumps your veins. In the shade, you can love what repeats, branched river and snake tracks in the leaf, the fruit dangling like suspended suns, the years cycling, the slant-rhymed seasons, or the heron like a gray beacon on the same high limb each afternoon. Our daily habits, hearing a tune in thunder, words in the shaking leaves, praise the stuttering flow of light off waves, praise the linking wind, the sudden rains, promise that what was will be again. Praise lush soil, praise infinite patterns, of which you are made, to which you will return.
Well, the St. Louis Poetry Center is honoring Emily Dickinson this Sunday. Katie, as a poet, what does she mean to you?
Emily Dickinson was one of the first poets I studied. One of my teachers in high school was taking a course on Emily Dickinson, and so she introduced us to all kinds of poems, such as the ones that we read today, and There Is a Certain Slant of Light, and Hope is a Thing with Feathers. And so really, I learned about poetry from Emily Dickinson. I learned both what a poem was and what was possible with poetry. And she's been an influence ever since then.
Would you share some Dickinson with us then?
I would love to read one of my favorite poems. It begins, I dwell in possibility. I dwell in possibility, a fairer house than prose, more numerous of windows, superior for doors, of chambers as the cedars, impregnable of eye, and for an everlasting roof, the gambrels of the sky, of visitors, the fairest, for occupation, this, the spreading wide my narrow hands to gather paradise.
Lauren, after Emily Dickinson died, there was a fight over her copyright.
Yes, real estate, adultery, theft, all these things combined to for this fight. Emily Dickinson's sister gave the mistress of her brother 500 poems in the hopes of getting them published. And the mistress did indeed publish these poems and edited them rather well. Her daughter inherited those poems, and the real niece wanted them back in order to have all of the poems together in one collection. So they went to court for it. And to this day, it's been very hard to gather all of this material together, but scholars will never give up. I would like to read one of her poems, and this is in honor of the work that Michael Eastman has made, especially for the silent auction for the St. Louis Poetry Center. A precious, moldering pleasure 'tis to meet an antique book in just the dress his century wore, a privilege, I think. His venerable hand to take, and warming in our own, a passage back or two to make to times when he was young. His quaint pinions to inspect, his thought to ascertain, on themes concern our mutual mind, the literature of man. What interested scholars most, what competitions ran, when Plato was a certainty, and Sophocles a man. When Sappho was a living girl, and Beatrice wore the gown that Dante deified, facts centuries before. He traverses familiar as one should come to town and tell you all your dreams were true. He lived where dreams were born. His presence is enchantment. You beg him not to go. Old volumes shake their vellum heads and tantalize just so.
The St. Louis Poetry Center presents The Belle of Blueberry Hill, Emily Dickinson at the Duck Room. That's at Blueberry Hills Duck Room, Sunday at 4 p.m. It'll be readings of Emily Dickinson plus a silent auction, part of honoring the month. We want to thank you all for being here, Lauren Cuoco, also Bill Gass and Katie Didden of the St. Louis Poetry Center. April is National Poetry Month. If you'd like more information about this event, go to stlpublicradio.org to the Cityscape page, and we'll have a link to the Poetry Center's website. Again, thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
And now commentator Nancy Kranzberg shares these thoughts about the definition of art.
Christina Van Dyck, director of the Pulitzer Foundation for the Arts, recently gave a lecture to the St. Louis Art Museum docents on African art in the museum's collection. A definition of art rolled off her tongue very smoothly and eloquently. She said, "What is art? It is an expression of what it means to be human." This triggered something in me and made me want to ask some people who I admire in the art world to give me their personal definition of art without thinking too long and hard about it. I asked Rich O'Donnell, retired principal percussionist of the St. Louis Symphony and founder of Herding Cats Collective, a new music group. He told me it was not an easy assignment and got back to me 5 minutes after I asked him the question. He said, "What we are conscious of defines our individual reality. Art is a portal to realities that can't be expressed in any other way." Our own Jan Greenberg, one of America's most prominent writers about art and artists for young people, preferred to quote Henry James in his short story, The Middle Years. James said, "We work in the dark. We do what we can. We give what we have. Our doubt is our passion, and our passion is our task. The rest is the madness of art." One of the very brilliant docents at the St. Louis Art Museum, Susan Weber, who also happens to be a physician as well as a scholar, didn't flinch. She immediately said, "Art is human expression." The Yale University Art Gallery at an open house asked, "What is art and why does it matter?" and asked the people to respond online. Here are some of the responses. Rachel Dranoff said, "Primal expression. It matters because it makes people feel like they're heard. Ooh." And Adam Horowitz said, "Art is what we create, partake, and explore in order to itch at the void and celebrate humanity." Aaron Mishara said, "Art is the human contribution to nature, enviously mirroring its beauty, but introducing human error." Frank Lloyd Wright, writing in 1957, as cited in Frank Lloyd Wright on Architecture, Nature, and Human Spirit, a collection of quotations, says, "Art is the discovery and development of elementary principles of nature into beautiful forms suitable for human use." Oscar Wilde in The Soul of Man Under Socialism says, "Art is the most intense mode of individualism that the world has known." I've always said it takes a lot of nerve to write, paint, sculpt, sing, play an instrument, dance, etc., and say, "Hey, this is art." Take a look or a listen. Francis Ford Coppola, in a recent interview, said, "An essential element of any art is risk. If you don't take a risk, then how are you going to make something really beautiful that hasn't been seen before?" I always like to say that cinema without risk is like having no sex and expecting to have a baby. You have to take a risk. I certainly can't one-up any of these definitions, but I'm sure glad that we have art in our world, since, as someone once said, art nourishes the soul. I'm Nancy Kranzberg.
Nancy Kranzberg has been involved in the arts community for some 30 years on numerous arts-related boards. And time now for a look at the Cityscape calendar. The Two Hill presents Chicago's Comedy Theater, The Second City, in Laughing Matters tonight at 7 and 10, and tomorrow night at 5 and 9 in the Two Hill Performing Arts Center's Lee Theater on the UMSL campus. The West End Players Guild's production of Michael Hollinger's Opus opens tonight at 8 and will continue through April 14th in the theater at Union Avenue Christian Church. Most shows will be preceded by a performance by a local chamber music ensemble beginning at 7:30. Opera Theater of St. Louis presents St. Louis Symphony Chorus Director Amy Kaiser in the first of four programs in the Illuminating Opera Series, focusing on each of the four operas in the 2013 season, Saturday morning at 9:45 in the Sally S. Levy Opera Center on Hazel Avenue on the Webster University campus. Cinema St. Louis presents a screening of the silent classic Greed with live musical accompaniment as part of the Greater St. Louis Humanities Festival. That's tomorrow evening, 7 o'clock, in Webster University's Moore Auditorium. A. Dennis Barger conducts the Bach Society of St. Louis in Music for Voices and Strings, Sunday evening at 7 at Ladue Chapel Presbyterian Church on Clayton Road. And you can find out more about these and other events on the events section of stlpublicradio.org. Next week on Cityscape, we'll talk about the 2013 Greater St. Louis Jazz Festival and the Women's Chorus, Karis's 20th Anniversary Concert. And join Don Marsh Monday for St. Louis on the Air when he'll talk with David Sheff about his new book on preventing and treating addiction, inspired by his own experiences with his son's battle with drug addiction. Archived versions of past Cityscape programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. Cityscape is produced by Mary Edwards and Alex Hoyer, engineered by Aaron Dorr, with production assistance from Spencer Reed and Drew Becker. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. Cityscape is made possible in part by the Arts and Education Council of Greater St. Louis, the Regional Arts Commission, and the Missouri Arts Council, a state agency. Cityscape is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. I'm Steve Potter. Thanks for listening.